Sticks, Chapter 19. Does that hurt? Dr. Oglethorpe is pushing around my left wrist. No. How about that? She's watching me hard and it hurts. No. She bends it up. Ouch! Dr. Oglethorpe takes a deep breath and steps back. It's been 3 weeks, I tell her. The swelling's gone. You said I'd be okay in 3 weeks. I said we'd see. When is this tournament? She asks. A week, and I've got to play. Mickey, says Mom, and I got to practice too every day. Make a fist, Dr. Oglethorpe says. I make a strong one. She folds her arms and looks at me. Well, I suppose if Mickey Mantle could play baseball for 19 seasons of unceasing pain, Mickey Vernon could play this week. You can't do any permanent damage. Yes! Mom's looking worried. But, the doctor says, you use ice regularly. You take Tylenol every 6 hours. You listen to what your body is telling you, Mickey. If it hurts too much, you stop and rest and put your splint back on. Deal? Deal. One more thing, says the doctor. Just how good are you on a pool table? I'm okay, I say. He's awesome, says Mom. I get my rack of balls and walk to table 12, cool like Joe Alvarez does. I got catching up to do. I walk by Buck, who's nailing shots on table 6. You get the diaper off your hand, Vernon? I look right past him. Excellent, Arlen whispers. Pay no attention. He's a dead man. Total concentration. We're here for one thing. Arlen racks the balls. I take a stick from the wall and feel its weight. I take some practice strokes at the air. It's good to be back. I bend over table 12, aim at the racked balls dead center, and on the snap. The balls go flying, but nothing drops. I rub my left wrist. It aches. I expected that. No pain, no gain. I aim again and shoot the one ball, the two. Arlen asks if I need ice yet. No, I need to practice. I need to catch up. Pow! Arlen's using string and a ruler to show the lines the balls will travel. You got to think about the lines the other balls will follow when you pick your shots. He takes the string away. Can you see it? Not yet. I'm rubbing my wrist and my fingers hurt. Line up the shot, Arlen says. See the ball. See the line. Find out how it'll travel, find the angle of incidence, and hit it there. I'm playing for position. Hit the 4 with English. Let the cue ball move into place near the 5. I scratch on the 6. I wasn't thinking ahead. Joe Alvarez comes in to watch me. Arlen and I show him all about seeing the table. He says that in all the years he's known my dad, he never told him about the lines. He really gets into it. We're all brainstorming together about different shots, and the lines Dad might have seen cutting through them. That's when he tells me to just call Joseph if you want, which I really want to do. Welcome back, Joseph says, and puts a thin gray case on table 12. Open it. I open it, and there's a cue inside, white and gray with black racing stripes. I look at him. That's a decent stick for you, he says. It'll fit your hands and your weight. I'm looking at the stick. My own stick? A Musi? I don't know what to say. He screws it together for me and I take it, and the weight is perfect. It's great, Joseph. Man, I'm aiming it. Arlen's touching it like it's made of diamonds. Thank you. My pleasure, son. You've earned it. I take a few shots with it, and a few more. The light on the table 12 beams over us. It's like the stick was made for me. But my hand's hurting bad. I promised Mom I wouldn't push it. So I look over at Buck, who's crashing balls into pockets like a machine, and I go upstairs with Joseph to ice my hand. I keep the ice on it until we leave for Cruxton High School to see Camille play. Nobody told me about the people falling in love. I close my eyes every time the boy and girl get close and start singing. The costumes are almost the best part. The best part is when the curtain crashes down on one of the dancers' heads, right when she's twirling and everybody on stage is shouting to pull it back up. Camille goes on stage at the end and everyone claps for her. I stomp my feet up and down so I won't hurt my hand and make a much cooler noise than clapping. 6 days to go. All day at school, I keep thinking about the tournament. During recess, when we're playing King of the Mountain and I keep getting shoved off too easy when I make it to the top. During art, while I'm working on my African warrior mask, painting the papier-mâché cheeks bright gold and purple, I stick feathers at the top and make the mouth look angry, and I picture this huge warrior with a spear doing a death dance around Buck Pender. T.R. Dobbs is working on his mask next to me. He's descended from African Zulu warriors, and he says a Zulu never retreats in the face of the enemy. I'm descended mostly from potato farmers, which isn't a lot to hold on to when you need to be tough. I lift the mask to my face and shout a Zulu war cry that T.R. taught me. Zulu! Zulu! Mr. Pez, the art teacher, looks up. I look down and keep painting. Nobody turns me in. It's easy to be brave when the enemy isn't around. The days go fast and slow. I keep practicing and my hand keeps hurting. I'm wondering how athletes play in pain. Arlen says it must be the big-time money they earn that keeps them going. I'm playing anyway, but playing is like a blur. Hitting, breaking, over and over. Arlen hasn't left anything anywhere for 6 whole days. He has his motto, which is, think wood everywhere. I'm thinking wood now, too, and really helping him. Every time I pick up my new stick, I make him check his stuff to see if he forgot something. Best friends help each other. Mom's worried. She says I'm too driven. She yelled at Joseph when he was telling me the great secrets of the pros. Play your best, whether you're ahead or behind. Is that all that's important to you? She shouted, winning. No, Ruthie, it's just something to shoot for. I'm definitely behind. The days click off, and it's hard to concentrate in school. Mrs. Riggles calls Mom in for a conference about it, and Mom gets all upset at me even though I got an A- on my soldier letter. Mom says a tournament is becoming bigger than life. It's always been pretty big, I say. I want you to concentrate on your schoolwork. Mrs. Riggles is so worked up about the American Revolution, she's jumping to 1783 when the Treaty of Paris was signed, and the British and the Americans finally quit fighting, jumping back to 1775, and Paul Revere's ride when he warned the colonists that the Redcoats were coming. Mrs. Riggles teaches history backwards and forwards so we'll get the connections. She says Paul Revere had to push beyond himself and his personal safety to get on that horse and sound the warning to his countrymen. I'm looking at the picture of Paul Revere on Mrs. Riggles' desk, wondering how he found the courage. We have pasta for dinner Friday night. I have thirds to boost my energy for the next day. The tournament is going to start in 13 hours. I'm watching a video of my dad playing pool. It's the only video we've got when he loses. Dad's wearing a green shirt and black pants. The sign behind him says, World-Class Billiards. The crowd watching him is quiet out of respect. Dad's in stroke, shooting fast and easy, holding a stick like it's part of his arm. His body curves into the slam when he gets on the ball, and he's smiling. Then he messes up, hits a bummer shot which leaves him with nothing, and the crowd groans. Dad's face gets hard. He tries a tough bank shot on the 7 ball and misses bad. The crowd sighs, but Dad just shrugs, smiles, and steps away from the table as the guy he's playing wins the championship. The crowd is clapping away. Dad's the first one up to shake the winner's hand. He's still smiling, and it is for real. Not those fake smiles losers get sometimes. He slaps that man on the shoulder and whispers something in the guy's ear. The guy laughs, and Dad walks off to let the winner have his day. I think about that as I brush my teeth and get into bed. I know my dad wanted to win that tournament, but losing didn't crush him. Maybe losing can only hurt you if you open the door and let it in. Poppy comes into my room with an ice pack. I don't think I'm going to do too well tomorrow, I say, getting used to the idea. Poppy sits on the bed next to me and puts the ice pack on my hand. Only the good Lord knows what's going to happen, honey. But I can tell you this. Sometimes just standing tall is a whale of a victory, she says. Chapter 20. This is it. Kids are everywhere. Banners are flying. Parents are giving last-minute playing tips, waving their arms, and shouting that it's only a game. Mrs. Cassetti keeps running across the street from the bakery asking if anything's happened yet. Mr. Kopchick closed his store for the day to root for me. Mr. Gatto's here, too. He got his son-in-law Dolan to manage cut-rate gas and groceries, even though he says Dolan might run the business into the ground before lunch. Camille walks by with Brad Lunder, her almost boyfriend. She messes up my hair and wishes me extra good luck, and says that now that the splint is off, I can go back to laundry. I'm standing at table 9 putting my stick together. I'm wearing my black t-shirt, khakis, and my new high-top Nikes with super mega traction. My first game is with Rick Plotsky, who's a pretty good player. Don't be nervous. It's Francine. She sits on a folding chair. She's wearing an orange neon sweatshirt that says, "I believe in magic." Nervous is a dirty word, Mickey. Nervous is out of the vocabulary. She lowers her voice. "I lit a candle for you this morning at Mass." "Thanks," I said. Francine whips a magic red scarf from her sleeve as Arlen runs up, adjusts his glasses, and looks at me. "You ready?" he says. "Yeah." Buck pushes through the crowd, growling. His father marches behind him. Mr. Pender's got a purple splotch running down the side of his face, and his eyes are puffy and gray. Mrs. Pender runs to catch up with them. She's fiddling with her wedding ring, and she's nervous. "Well, this is nice," she says to Buck, who doesn't answer her. Buck stares at Jerry Docks, who he's playing first, and Jerry gets pale. Mother's clutching her necklace, asking me about my hand for the third time. "It's fine," I say, which is half true. She looks at Serena and smiles brave as Joseph pats me on the back. "Play with heart, son. That's all you need to bring to the table." Big Earl is checking in the last-minute sign-ups. I rub my left hand, which I've been icing since I got up. It's near frozen. "I'm sorry. Wasn't my fault." Petty Pencastle is standing in front of me, waving his arms. "Huh?" "I told my parents it wouldn't be fair. He's so big and all, and nobody was expecting him." Petty points a shaky finger toward the counter where a huge boy is signing the tournament sheet. "It's my cousin," Petty wails. "They're up visiting from Elizabeth for the weekend." "He's a real good player, Mickey," Petty lowers his voice. "They call him the Sledgehammer." We look at the giant who's getting instructions from Big Earl. If Arlen and I stood side by side, we'd maybe be as wide. "He's too old to play," Arlen shouts. "You can't play if you're over 13. He's 16 at least." "He's 13, Petty says, groaning. "He turns 14 next week. His father had to show his birth certificate at school. He's too big to fit into the desks. They must be giving him steroids." "This isn't happening," Arlen screams. I look at Buck, who's doing his shoulder-loosening motion. I look at the Sledgehammer, who's so big he's casting a shadow over the counter. I put both hands on the table 9 and lean over. I'm finished. Joe Alvarez leans in. "Blinders," he says. "Man, it's so much easier when you're practicing." Poppy blows her tournament whistle, and I move slowly into place. Poppy runs her kids' tournament official, just like the grown-up ones. "We're going to play this tournament like the great game of pool should be played," Poppy shouts to the crowd. She's wearing her red Vernon's sweatshirt today. Poppy always wears red on special occasions. "We don't want any foul language. We don't want any cheating. And if you do either of these things, you're out." Slam! Poppy's fist hits the counter. "We got umpires at each table, and believe me, you don't want to mess with them." All the umps look tough. Snake Mensker, Big Earl Reed, Madman Trussell shakes his ponytail like a crazy dog and cracks his knuckles. Now let's face the flag of our great land and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Poppy brings the flag out for tournaments. I'm saying the pledge loud like I've been taught. Buck's not pledging. I wonder if I can turn him in. "All right now," Poppy screams. The kids who won first up bend down to break. The umpire leans forward. Poppy blows her whistles. "Crack 'em good." There's a crash so loud it shakes the walls as 24 cue balls ram across 24 tables. My heart's pumping. Pool games are won one ball at a time. Rick Plotsky gets nothing in on the break. My turn. I make the 1, 2, 3. I miss the 4, but Rick does 2. We battle for ball, but I win. "Game to Mickey Vernon," says Madman, punching the air. I win the second game, too. It's the best 2 out of 3. And that's a match to Mickey Vernon. Rick and I shake hands. "Good game," I tell him, and win first up against T.R. Dobbs, who just won his match. T.R. has never beaten me. I dig down deep and break with my whole body. The cue balls rams the one clean and breaks the ball apart. 6 in the back corner. I chalk my stick light, moving around the table. No good shots. I do a safety like Joe showed me, hiding the cue ball behind another ball to give your opponent a hard shot. TR groans at the nightmare I left him and tries shooting the one, but he gets the nine ball in by mistake. And that's the worst thing you can do. Game to Mickey Vernon, says Madman. I do like the way that sounds. I ace the next rack. My match again. My hand's hurting, but I don't care. Dinah Glossop and I are up next. She's a tough player, and we battle hard. She snookers me behind the eight ball. I can't get a clear shot on the six, and flub the shot bad. Dinah wins the first game. I blow two shots on the rail, and I just win the second game. I look over at Buck, who's definitely gunning down the enemy on table three. Pike Laurie is shouting every time Buck makes a shot. Poppy tells Pike if he doesn't zip that lip of his, she's going to pick four of her biggest umpires to toss him into the street. Pike shuts up and fuming. I'm taking Tylenol for the third game with Dinah. I break hard, eight in the corner. English on the one to gain position, and look at the effect each shot will have on the next. Find the angles. Shoot it straight and concentrate. I win it. Dinah shakes my hand. I'm looking around, but I don't know where Arlen is. I'm rubbing talcum powder on my hand so that my stick won't slip. I win three more matches, and then four. Match to Mickey Vernon, Madman saying over and over. We stop for lunch, and I'm icing my hand. It's aching bad. I haven't played this long since I sprained it. I'm taking deep breaths and keeping my focus. Easy stroke, easy win. I find Arlen in the corner by the sledgehammer's table, writing something on a piece of paper. He always watches me play. I tell him I've been winning. Well, of course you have, he says, and goes back to writing. Poppy comes over and looks at the left wrist. How bad is it? She says. You tell me the truth now. It's half bad. The soreness is shooting from my wrist through my fingers, and my elbow isn't feeling too good as well. Can you play? Yeah, I can play. Then don't concentrate on where it hurts. Concentrate on all the places that feel fine. Is that what you do? Every day. Poppy blows her whistles, and we're playing again. My nose is feeling pretty good, and I can concentrate on that. I'm shooting and breaking, banking, hurting. The games blur into each other. Straight shots, safeties, double banks. I'm acing my banks. 90-degree angles, 45s. Divide the angle by two. Nail it hard, and yes. I make a 140-degree bank against Shelty Zoller, and Madman's eyes go back in his head. I'm still standing. I'm playing 12- and 13-year-olds now. Nicky Prinz, Ted Carruthers, Pike Laurie. Pike tries cheating and moving the cue ball, saying he didn't mean to touch it. Madman's all over him and gives me the game. I whip Pike extra nice on the second rack, just in case he didn't think I could lick him for real. But with each new game, my hand gets worse. Still, the Musi's shooting like a rifle. I don't know where it's coming from. Madman's saying it's different each time. Match to Mickey Vernon. Match to Mr. Vernon. And another match to Mick the Stick. Mom is grinning. Joseph Alvarez is beaming. Poppy's playing it cool, but I can tell inside she's busting. Where's Arlen? It's 3 o'clock. I keep climbing higher, higher, one ball at a time. I've got to play Tim Irons. He's a monster on position. Tim gets in place, and I'm looking over at Arlen, but he's watching the sledgehammer like he's the big show. What's he doing? I've got to focus, though. Blinders, like my dad. Tim's big, and he's got power. He's not injured. He throws himself into the break and cracks the balls apart, but gets nothing in. What he leaves me is a miracle. An easy shot off the one ball to the pocket nine. If I make it, I win the game with one shot. I make it. Anything can happen in nine ball. Game to Mickey here, Madman shouts. I can't believe it. Tim slumps over as Madman racks the balls. I break. I bust them up, three ball in the corner. I foul on the one, and Tim uses it for position. We battle to the wire until the nine ball's left. Tim makes it, but he scratches on the break in the next game. I don't know how, but the ball rolls with me. I run the table and tap the nine in the side. Tim's standing right there like he's been struck by lightning. Match to Mickey Vernon. Yes! It's now 4 o'clock, and there are four players left. Me, Buck, Cindy Grassini, and the sledgehammer. I'm the only player here that's not 13 years old. It's a miracle I am here. I stand extra tall because I am the shortest. My hand is throbbing. I don't know if I can play anymore. Poppy puts our names in a Yankees cap and picks two at a time to decide who'll play next. Cindy is the only one I can maybe beat, and I'm not laying money on that. She's tough. Poppy hands the names to the umpires. I'm trying to read her face, but she's wearing the one she uses for poker. Eyes straight ahead, jaw shut. The one big girl says no one can decipher. How come I gotta go there? Buck Pender's looking at Snake Mensker, who's pointing over to my table. Because I said so. I close my eyes. No. I got Buck. And that's it. I'm not even going to make the finals. This whole year I've been picturing Buck and me as the last guy standing. Snake steps back to let Buck pass. Mr. and Mrs. Pender follow him. Mrs. Pender whispers, "Be a good sport now, Buck." Cindy Grassini walks to the sledgehammer's table. My hand hurts so bad. I stand there at table 9 because I don't know what else to do. Buck stomps over, wipes his mouth on his work shirt, and looks at me laughing. "You're going down, Vernon." Chapter 21. "This is the semifinal round," Poppy announces. The pool hall is quieter than I've ever heard it. I step up to the table. I've got a break. Mom has her arms folded tight, trying not to look nervous. Joseph Alvarez nods at me and winks. The crowd around the table is too deep. Buck's people on the left, mine on the right. I can't concentrate on who's here. I can't think about my hand and how much it hurts. I can't worry that Buck's trying to get with me, with that expression on his face that says I'm wasting my time. This is the semifinals. Slam! I ram my stick into the white cue ball and get two in on the break. My people applaud extra loud. I make the one, the three, just get the five, tip the six into the corner pretty wobbly, but it does go in. That's all that matters in pool, and there's three balls left. I can't look at Buck even though he's looking at me. I can feel it, though. I can feel his fat smile breaking across his face. I miss the seven. Stupid! My people groan. Buck steps up to the table like he owns it. He looks at his father, who doesn't look back. Buck aims long on the seven, bends down, and rams it straight in. He eyeballs the eight. It's lying on the rail, a tough shot. Buck wipes sweat from his forehead. He wipes the sweat from his hands. He aims low, and his stick slips. The eight moves 3 inches. I hit it in fast and set up pretty for the nine ball. I get the nine nice in the side pocket. "Yes!" shouts Joseph above the rest. "Match to Mickey Vernon!" Madman shouts, strutting. Buck's looking at me like he can't believe it. I look right back at him. "Believe it." Madman racks the balls. I've got maybe one more break in me, and then my hand's going to stop working. I push back on the Super Mega Traction Nikes. The cue ball crashes down the table. Seven in the corner. I rub my wrist. It hurts so bad. I do an okay safety on the one. "I'll get him now," Buck says to his father. Mr. Pender sits there like a statue. The only thing moving is that vein beating in his neck. Mrs. Pender is fiddling with her purse strap. Buck gets the one in the side on a great shot. He nails the two, the three, then he scratches on the four, which is a big mistake. I put the cue ball by the four ball, which is 3 inches in the side pocket. "You can't beat me, Vernon." "Yes, I can." Wham! My stick's on fire. Five in the corner. Bank the six in the side, long drive on the eight, right on the money. Just the nine ball and me are left. Nobody's moving. It's a long corner shot. I look down the table like it's a runway. Focus in and shoot. And yes! The nine speeds into the corner. That's the match. Mr. Kopchick's shaking Mr. Gatto. "Did you see that, Gatto?" "I saw it, Kopchick." I touch the dark green cloth of table 9 and throw back my head. Madman yells it so everyone can hear. "That's a shutout for Mickey Vernon." I go toward Buck to shake his hands, but he won't do it. He's yelling that it's not fair, that table 9's a bad table, his stick wasn't straight, the whole thing was rigged, and he wants a rematch. Mr. Pender's whole face is purple. He's shoving Buck toward the door. How come you can't just lose decent? He shouts. Mrs. Pender stands there waving her skinny hands in the air like a little bird. You did very well, she said to me. You're a fine young man. I'm sorry about my son. He doesn't have much faith in himself. She shakes my hand as the crowd breaks in on us like a big wave. Mom and Joseph and Camille and Poppy and Francine and Petty and TR and so many others. They're saying that I did it and I look tough. Buck's already gone. I can't believe I beat him. I look through the crowd to Arlen, who sticks his thumb in the air and smiles at me and goes back to writing like mad. Guys are slapping me on the back, saying to give the big guy what for? I tell them, thanks, I'll try. I don't have to pinch myself to see if I'm dreaming because my hand hurts so much. I know this is real. I walk to the sledgehammer who won his match against Cindy. He's murder, Cindy says to me, moving off. Chapter 22. I don't know how I'm going to play. I'm icing my hand, trying to find the power in my fingers. I'm stopping this game, Mickey, Mom shouts. I will not let it be destructive to your body. Mom, I got to play. No, you don't. I throw the ice pack down and grab her arm. I've got to. Joseph comes over. Ruthie, I don't mean to interfere here, but a man's got to do what a man's got to do. She spins around. This isn't the streets of Laredo, Joseph. This is New Jersey. I can see the pain all over his face. I blow up my cheeks big to get the pain off. I don't think it works, and I swallow hard. It hurts, Mom. You're right. The doctor said I couldn't do any permanent damage. I've got to play. Please. She sits down on the bench against the wall underneath the photograph of Alan Hopkins, who was the New Jersey State nine-ball champion 4 times and won the U.S. Open for nine-ball twice. Okay, she whispers. Joseph sits next to her and says something I can't hear. Mom shakes her head and smiles a little. She pats her on the hand. Arlen runs up to me and hands me a sheet of paper. He doesn't know the math, Mickey. Look, I've got it right here. I've watched every game the Sledgehammer's played all day. I've charted the shots he can make and the ones he can't in his last 15 games. I know his patterns. That's what you were doing? What'd you think I was doing? What a friend. I looked at the paper. Bad news first, Arlen says. He has an awesome break and he's great on long straight shots. He made 30 out of 35 attempts. He's a power shooter. But he's got no touch when the balls are on the rail, see? He made 3 out of last 17, that's all. That's only 18%, and the banks aren't much better. He made 4 out of the last 16 tries for only 25% completion. He hasn't even tried a bank in the last 6 games. Every time he misses a bank shot or a rail shot, he gets upset and he plays his next inning bad. I didn't clock his medium and short shots. I checked the stats. You leave him banks and rail shots, Arlen's saying. It's not the easiest thing, but try. Joseph looks at the papers and slaps Arlen on the back. Play position, Joseph says to me. Don't look at his size. He's a big guy with a lot of weak points. Play them if you can. You can control the ball. This is for the championship, Poppy yells. The sledgehammer moves forward like a tank. I take my stick in my good hand and walk to table two. You boys go at this clean now, Poppy says. The sledgehammer and I shake hands. Mine disappears inside his. My head comes more than halfway up to his chest. He's got a mustard stain on his right shoulder of his striped shirt. He smiles at me. Good luck, kid. I swallow big. You too. I get the break, and I ram it with all I've got. 6 in the corner. I make the 1, the 2. The 3 is impossible. I just do a safety right on the rail. The sledgehammer bends over the table and blows the rail shot bad, just like Arlen said. I make the 3, miss the bank on the 4, but I get lucky and leave him another bank. He shakes his head and bends over to shoot. He's sweating good now. He looks around and goes for a safety. Arlen was right. My turn. I rub my hand. I maneuver out of the safety and get lucky. I leave him with another bank, and he blows it again. I get a bead on the 4 and line it up. It zooms into the side pocket. I'm eyeballing the 5. Smack! It goes in. 3 more left, and I get them too. 7, 8, and 9. Game to Mickey Vernon. The crowd is applauding. Earl racks the balls. Arlen's going, yes, yes. It's my break and my hand feels broken. I feel like crying, but I can't do that. So I step back on my super mega traction Nikes and whack. The crowd groans. I can't believe it. The cue ball just nicks the one and sits there. Nothing in. A total dud. The sledgehammer walks up smiling to take his inning. He's got shark teeth, and he throws his huge body into the stroke. He breaks the balls apart like lightning, and the three ball zooms into the corner. He hits the one, the two. He's eyeballing the four, makes it in a combo off of the eight. He gets a big round of applause. The five goes down and then the six. The balls are lying perfect for him. He's running the table, picking off the seven, the eight in his long straight rifle shots, and it's happening so fast. He makes the nine easy. Game to Gordon Sledge, says Big Earl. The sledgehammer nods to the applauding crowd. Joseph slaps me on the shoulder as Earl racks the balls. The tanks break. If he runs them again, I'm history. The balls break apart like thunder. Seven in the corner. The two's lying on the rail and I hold my breath. He misses. I let out a big breath and chalk my stick and move toward the two. I'm pushing out of the crowd in my mind and pushing out the pain. I can't see the table like my dad, but I do feel something. I smile big and suddenly I see the lines. Not the actual lines in the table, but I know where they'd be. I can feel where they would be. Shooting out from the balls, shooting out from my eyes, shooting out from my stick like vectors straight and true right into the pockets, and not just stopping there, but continuing like lines do out the door and down the street and all the way to the New Jersey Turnpike and clear down to Florida. Energy zooms through my legs. Pool games are won one ball at a time. The energy carries me forward, and it's stronger than the pain. Two ball in the side. I bank around the five ball and get the three in the corner. Now the crowd is going crazy. Four ball in the side, five. Bring the cue ball back for position on the six and control the ball. Don't concentrate on where it hurts. Feel the winning pump through my blood. I bank the six clean, bring the cue ball around to the eight. Give it a nice tap with the bridge and miss. No. I push back from the table, feeling dead as Gordon Sledge takes up the inning. He taps the eight in. Only the nine balls left, and it's a hard slice shot. If he makes it, he's got the game. I think he's going to make it. The sledgehammer is sweating now. He wipes his wide face. Just do it. He aims his stick and makes a clean hit. The nine ball heads toward the pocket, and I close my eyes. He's got the shirt. Ooh, the crowd groans. I open my eyes, and the sledgehammer steps back, shocked. The nine ball's lying there, hugging the cushion. He missed. I'm staring at the table. I believe it's your inning, Mickey V, Big Earl says. I step up to the table now. It's me and the nine ball eyeballing each other. It's a two-rail bank of 45-degree angles. A maniac shot. But to win, sometimes you gotta risk it all. I find my angle and sense the line shooting off the rail. I aim the greatest pool stick in America, and I shoot. The nine ball slams once, twice, and zooms into the corner. That's the way, Poppy screams. I lift my stick in the air as everyone starts running toward me. My hand's killing me, and I'm feeling fine. Joseph runs over and hugs me, and Mom is trying to punch through the screaming crowd. Big Earl is pushing his way to me with the red shirt. It was clean Vernon knockout, Poppy says. Big Earl is saying, Mickey Vernon, I present you with the tournament shirt. You wear it proud. I put it on, and it's feeling pretty big. I can feel the pride pumping through me. The sledgehammer comes up and shakes my hand. Congratulations, kid. Shirt wouldn't have fit me anyway. Thanks, Gordon. You played tough. Arlen's waving his mechanical pencil in the air. Petty Pencastle and T.R. Dobbs plow through the big kids because this is a fifth-grade moment and should be shared by every 10-year-old in America. Fifth-grade rules, shouts T.R. All right now, Poppy says, trying to gain control. The shouting and clapping die down. Snake Mensker starts it with his stick, pounding on the floor in the pool table's applause. Joseph grabs a stick from the wall. The umpires follow, and one by one the players join in, pounding their sticks for me on the old gray tile floor until the sound bounces off the panel walls and echoes down from the ceiling. It's the greatest honor that a player can get. I'm hoping with all my heart that my dad can hear it in heaven. Chapter 23. I wear the red shirt for 2 weeks before I let Mom wash it. She says it stinks to high heaven. If she doesn't wash it soon, it's going to stand up by itself. I only wear it to school once, the night of the science fair. My hand isn't hurting at all by then. Arlen and I hang Rory Magellan out to dry, even though his mother lets him put the volcano in the middle of the big meeting room in the town hall, and everyone has to stand around while he gives a dumb speech about the importance of chemistry in our everyday lives that Arlen says would make Mr. Science heave. Rory pours Palmolive detergent into the volcano hole, adds some red food coloring, vinegar, and water. Then he quickly mixes baking soda with a little water and pours it in. If there's an eruption, we all miss it. The volcano burps twice, and one red drop of reddish muck drips out. Sometimes chemistry in our everyday lives is a bust. Rory's face is green, my favorite color, as Arlen slaps on the top hat and announces that Mickey Vernon, Vernon's pool hall youth tournament champion and soon-to-be nine-ball champion of our entire universe, is going to demonstrate our findings. Step up to the center ring, Arlen shouts, and see the amazing secrets of the pool table. Everybody does except Rory. I perform death-defying shots on the little table that my dad and I learned to play on as kids, while Arlen explains the math. I don't miss once. Mayor Blonsky tries a few shots and doesn't do as well as me. Mrs. Riggles says she's never thought of a pool table as having so many dimensions. Arlen presents his chart. Pool is also about math, that it can be used to blow the sledgehammer out of the water. Lots of scrawny kids are interested in that one. We win first prize. The mayor shakes our hands, and if he knows that Arlen's parents didn't vote for him, he isn't saying. He says it were a credit to the town and the furtherance of science. I let Arlen have the blue ribbon since I got the red shirt. Mrs. Pepper takes a picture of Arlen with all his science fair ribbons, and Arlen sends it off to Mr. Science the next day. I get my picture in the Cruxtown Comet twice in 1 month. Here's how the whole poster looks. It says, The Unbelievable Secrets of the Pool Table by Arlen Pepper and Mickey Vernon. 5th grade, Mrs. Riggles class, Grover, Cleveland Elementary School. The laws of the universe are everywhere, even places you wouldn't expect. Isaac Newton's laws of motion, at work on a pool table in this example. Number one, everybody remains in a state of rest in a straight line unless acted upon by forces from the outside. In pool talk, this means a pool ball isn't going anywhere unless it's hit by something. And once it starts moving, it needs something to stop it, like a rail, another ball, or the friction of the cloth on the table. Number two, the amount of acceleration of a body is proportional to the actual force and inversely proportional to the mass of the body. The harder you hit a pool ball, the faster it's going to go, and the less it weighs, the faster it'll go. And number three, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. A cue ball stops dead when it hits another ball straight on. Pool is also about math, the poster goes on to say. The universe stands continually open to our gaze, but it cannot be understood unless one first learns to comprehend the language and interpret the characters in which it is written. It's written in the language of mathematics, and its characters are triangles, circles, and other geometric figures, without which it's humanly impossible to understand a single word of it. Without these, one is wandering about in a dark labyrinth. Written by Galileo. Vectors for victory. A vector is a line that takes you from one place to the next. Some great pool players can picture vectors in their head going from the balls to the pocket. Bank shots use geometric angles. When you hit the eight ball at a certain angle to the rail, it'll bounce off the rail at the same angle. It's like my winning the tournament gets everything going. Arlen and I win the jelly bean guessing contest at Perlman's World of Fashion. We're only 33 beans off, which really impresses the store manager. She gives us a $100 gift certificate, but won't let us trade it in for cash, even when we mention that Perlman isn't a guy store. Maybe you boys could get your mother a nice gift, she says. Arlen convinces his mother to buy it from us for 70 cents on the dollar. I ask you, Arlen says to her as she hands him the cash, where in the world can you buy $100 for only 70? Arlen's parents finish the floor of his treehouse and put up two of the sides. It's got a ways to go before it's finished. Arlen and I climb up there anyway while Mangler's paws the trees and squeals. Arlen says it's a lesson to everyone living in this plastic age that wood does have power. Francine starts talking to her father again and convinces him to let her have a dove for her act. Francine calls the dove Lester, which she feels was the deciding factor. Francine says that Lester will make her famous as soon as he learns to fly out of the magic hat without pooping in midair. Buck isn't around much. I saw him by Vinny's Variety last week, but when he saw me, he looked away. I'm practicing pool twice a day except on Sunday because Poppy says even a world champion needs a day of rest. I'm setting my sights to play in the Northeast Youth Pool Open in Atlantic City in December. Joseph said he'll drive me there in the Peterbilt. I can see why he and Dad were such good friends. Joseph and Camille are becoming friends too. He tells her he can teach her pool, how to drive a truck, or how to make real Mexican enchiladas. Camille starts with a truck driving lesson, but after that they both decide enchiladas are safer. Joseph brings up buckets of barbecue from Texas, the best I've ever tasted, when Mom graduates from college. He and Mom understand each other more now, although it really gets to her when he talks the cowboy talk. Mom knows she can count on him. She says that's the biggest gift in friendship. We have a big party in Vernon's to celebrate Mom's graduation. Poppy hires Francine to do her magic act for the entertainment. Francine almost has a heart attack getting ready. You think I should wear my Easter dress or my stirrup pants and my sparkly tank top? Arlen and I look at each other. Do you think I should start with Lester coming out of the hat, or work up to it, or start with my flying scarves tricks that I do to the sound of music? Well, your grandmother is a saint, Mickey. Do you know that? It's like the whole town comes to the party. Poppy, Camille, Serena, and I blow up 100 balloons and hang them everywhere with a ribbon. Francine starts with Lester. He flies out of her hat straight up to the ceiling fan and only comes down when she threatens to turn it on. But otherwise, her show goes fine. Even her card tricks. Everyone says it's only a matter of time before she plays Vegas. Francine walks through the rest of the party in her stirrup pants and sparkly tank top with a smile so happy it makes her braces glow. Poppy and Earl sing songs from the olden days while Mr. Big Earl plays his guitar. Mr. Kopchick dances with Mrs. Cassetti. Camille kisses Brad Lunder by the Coke machine near the storage closet, and Arlen gets a picture of it. Mom cries and says that having the party in the pool hall is perfect because she's learned so much living above it. I know what she means. Every time I walk into Vernon's now, I feel courage pumping through me. That's the best thing about playing pool. Some people say numbered balls on the table and just learn the rules. But when the game's in your blood, you learn that's what's inside of you. The end.